His leg began to shake after a few seconds, and he slowly brought it down to the next step. His boot touched down with a soft thump. A high-pitched alien cry replied. He didn't waste any time in reaching up to flip on his light. The beam shot out and captured an eyeless face staring up at him from a few steps below. The sinewy white-gray flesh of a siren hurtled forward, clawed hands reaching for his throat. The adrenaline rushing through his system saved his life. X matched the monster's speed, bringing up his rifle and firing a burst through its ribcage. Shrieking, it slammed into the wall. X loped down to the next landing, looking desperately for the medical center. He tried the door, but this one was locked. Enraged wails rang out above, spurring him on. He continued around the corner, sweeping his light and rifle muzzle over the stairs. His vision flickered, red suddenly washing over everything. He blinked, and the red faded. Shit, not good. The stairs were chipped and broken, but clear of contacts. The sight of the medical symbol, two serpents coiled around a winged staff, got him moving like a man half his age. He cleared the corner and turned to make sure the beasts above him weren't following. Their wails continued, but they weren't in sight. He flung open the door and burst into the passage with his rifle out front and his finger on the trigger. Clear. He closed the door and ran for the next one. Letting his rifle hang from the strap, he pulled his pistol and fired into the lock. The report filled his helmet, drowning out the rush of blood in his ears. Moving into the room, he swept the pistol over a space furnished with islands and workstations. His beam captured the freezer and several storage areas, the most likely places to start looking. Halfway across the room, a wave of dizziness washed over him, and sharp pains raced up his left arm. Was this the moment when his heart finally gave out? He eyed the cabinets not 100 feet away. X waited for his heart to slow from automatic gunfire to a fairly normal pace. It was taking too long. Sweat crept down his scalp. He ignored the wails above and focused on his breathing, inhaling for a count of 5, exhaling for a count of 7. The rhythm gradually calmed his racing heart, and he felt steady enough to move. He crossed the room and began raiding cabinets. 10 minutes into the search, he found a freezer, still powered by a generator somewhere deep beneath the ground. The second drawer contained cancer meds. X stuffed them into his backpack and went back out into the hallway. He listened for beasts at the door, but heard nothing. The facility had gone quiet again. He slowly opened the door and moved into the stairwell. Sure enough, it was empty. With the precious cargo on his back, he headed up the stairs. With each step, the grunting and crunching noises he had heard earlier grew louder. This was nothing like the normal emergency alarm screech the sirens made. He came to the carcass of the female he had killed on the way down and nudged it with his boot. At the next landing, he turned off his helmet lamp and flipped on his NVGs. He peered around the corner and into the open cryogenic chamber. Once his eyes adjusted to the green light, he scanned the massive room filled with silos like the one where he had found Miles. Hundreds of capsules lay shattered and empty. Several rows back, however, motion flickered around one of the towers and up the side. X's breath caught when he saw them. Hundreds of creatures were scaling the silos like ants, smaller than the usual sirens and hideously pale in the green hue of his optics. Children. At the top of the tower, several adults broke the glass of a capsule and tossed a full-grown human from the chamber to the floor below, where it landed with a sickening thud. The genetically modified human lay on the floor in a puddle of fluid mixed with blood. The young sirens scampered around it, grunting and pushing each other out of the way. Then one of them, an older child judging by its size, bounded forward and clamped down on the human's leg. It took a bite, ripping flesh from the ankle. The man jerked awake screaming in a voice that chilled X to the core. All at once, the other juvenile sirens joined the feast. X didn't wait around to watch. He bolted across the landing and up the stairs. The beasts, intent on their feast, must not have seen him. He ran past the communications door, but something stopped him. It had been months since he thought of the people in the sky and the warnings he had sent them. But what if they were still out there? What if they tried to raid this place and encountered the nest? He had given up on the people in the sky years ago, but the thought of them walking into a trap made him pause. Instead of moving up the stairs, X went back to the communications center to relay what could be his final message, a warning to stay away from ITC Communal 9. The distant wails of the monsters continued as X worked to bring the radio back online. Fortunately, the facility's nuclear-powered backup generators, installed to preserve the cryo chambers indefinitely, also powered other critical equipment. It took an hour to activate the radio and relay his message. By the time he finished sending the transmission, the eerie echoes had faded away, leaving him in silence. X used the time to search a row of lockers to make sure he wasn't leaving anything valuable behind. He found a sealed bottle of stimulants and a few dead batteries. The bottle went in the bag. As he closed the locker and turned to head back above ground, a metal banging froze him in place. The noise reverberated like a gong throughout the facility. The electronic cries of sirens rose in reply, dozens of them, all at once. The discord rose into a loud cacophony. But it was the next sound that made X freeze. Gunshots. Could they be real, or was this just his mind playing tricks? X moved slowly back to the door and peered down the hallway. Beams of green light jumped across his field of vision. He shut his NVGs off, and the green lights turned white. They darted back and forth, hitting the walls and ceiling of the landing at the end of the passage. Another gunshot rang out, and this time there was no mistaking it. Enraged sirens answered the noise. Had they learned how to fire a weapon? It was the only explanation, unless... X blinked rapidly, trying to grasp what he was hearing. Was it possible that the people from the sky had heard his message and come down? No. There was no way they had heard it and come for him this fast. Whoever these people were, either they had already been inside the facility or they slipped past him while he was in the radio room. He crept into the hallway, keeping the rifle pointed at the landing. He knelt and waited, the rifle wobbling in his shaky hands. The beams grew brighter, and a hulking metal figure strode past the landing and rounded the corner, dragging something meaty over the stairs. X reared back at the sight. It was the first human he had seen, and he realized he no longer knew. Metal clattered like a can being tossed against a wall, as more people in heavy armor trudged up the stairs. The light beams danced back and forth over a mesh wire net two of them were dragging. Inside the net, three sirens thumped up the stairs, all unconscious or dead. The wails continued from below, where more gunfire rang out. Whatever was happening had started when he was inside the radio room, but he hadn't heard anyone or anything slip past the steps outside. Curiosity pushed him to his feet as he moved a few steps forward, his rifle still aimed at the landing where the lights continued flitting across the stairwell. The metallic clanking grew louder, and voices rang out. They were muffled, but undeniably human, although he couldn't understand a word they were saying. Whoever these people were, they didn't speak his language. He considered retreating to the radio room to hide, but the voices were almost on top of him. Another armored hulk of a man crossed onto the landing, and X moved his finger to the trigger. But the figure kept moving, hauling another mesh net full of young sirens. One was still conscious, clawing and shrieking and flopping about. Melancholy wails answered. The adults were searching for their missing children. Gunshots held them back. A third man in an armored suit stepped onto the landing and pointed a long weapon with a spear-like muzzle at the siren. An electronic bolt flashed into the naked beast. It screeched and jerked violently on the ground for several seconds before going limp. X held in a breath and took a step backward, his metal armor scraping the concrete wall. The sound drew the men's attention. A helmet with two almond-shaped eye covers turned in his direction.
Contacto! The man yelled. Peligro!
X had the man at point-blank range, knowing he should pull the trigger, but for some reason he hesitated. These were humans, the first people he had seen in years. The armored figure raised the electrical rifle, and a blue arc leaped out and hit X in the chest before he could get off a shot. He crashed onto the concrete landing, jerking spastically. Unable to move, he watched Boots crossing toward him. The same stifled voices came from all directions as the men surrounded him. Loud, angry voices. His hesitation would likely cost him his life, and that would be the end for Miles, too.
No,
X mumbled, thinking of his dog. He tried to push himself up, but another jolt ripped through his body, and he went limp on the ground. 20. Present day.
This is Xavier Rodriguez. I'm currently...
The voice on the channel coughed again. In the mess hall aboard Deliverance, Magnolia listened over the PA system to the strained, scratchy voice of the man they were looking for. X gave his coordinates, and then said something she wasn't expecting.
Stay away from ITC Communal 9.
Magnolia frowned as the message concluded. It was like hearing the hoarse murmurings of a ghost. Timothy played it a third time, as if they might unlock some secret by listening to it over and over again. The divers sat at one of the 20 white tables in the mess hall, listening intently as X's voice rang out from the speakers. A day had passed since they landed on the island. After discovering another problem with the electrical system, Michael had kept them grounded for repairs. Now he wasn't sure what to do.
X sounds sick, Roger said.
There was a moment of silence as they considered the implications of the message and the state of the man who had transmitted it. X had warned anyone listening to avoid ITC Communal 9 in Miami, and he did sound ill. Had they come all this way for nothing?
This was 2 years ago, Michael asked. How come this is the first time we're hearing it?
20 months and 22 days ago, to be precise, Timothy replied. This is the first time I've detected the transmission. The last one was simply an SOS.
Is it possible the Hive could have received it as well? Magnolia said. Timothy's translucent form looked pensive.
Perhaps. But the electrical storm centered over this region may be interfering with radio communications, so unless the Hive is close, they likely won't hear this transmission.
Thank you, Timothy, Michael said. He heaved a sigh, and Magnolia watched him curiously, wondering what he was thinking.
This changes nothing, he finally said. X is still alive and we're going to find him. Now eat up. We're going to need the energy.
Magnolia could only pick at the gelatinous hunk of what was supposed to be meat. It jiggled like the flesh of a living creature. She forced down several bites anyway as Timothy appeared in front of the table, virtual hands clasped behind his back.
All secondary systems are online, sir. The ship is ready to depart.
Michael stood and looked at his team.
Once we start flying into that storm, there's no turning back. Are you all sure you're up for this?
Beats those boats and sea monsters, Magnolia said.
I'm ready, Layla said.
Roger nodded.
Good to go, sir.
Okay then, Michael said. Grab your gear and meet me on the bridge. A half hour later, the team gathered in the command center. They were all wearing their armor. Magnolia carried her helmet in the crook of her arm. Most of their equipment was in the cargo hold, ready to be deployed as soon as they landed in Miami, but she already had her lucky blades sheathed and strapped. On the bridge, Timothy's hologram stood at the helm between the wall-mounted monitor and the circular command island. Screens glowed at each station waiting for the crew that should be flying a ship this size. Instead of a full complement, it had 4 divers and an AI. The divers strapped into the comfortable leather chairs facing the helm.
Initiate systems checks, Michael said.
Magnolia, in charge of navigation, touched the screen and brought up their current location.
Online. Comms online, Roger said.
Life support online, Layla added.
After a brief pause, Michael nodded and said,
Fire her up, Timothy.
Deliverance growled to life, and the clatter of electrical relays and mechanical equipment raced through the ship. Vibrations shook the bridge as the nuclear-powered engine engaged, and Magnolia cinched up the harness across her chest. Roger looked over, his usual joking manner gone. Sincere brown eyes behind thick glasses met her gaze.
Everything's going to be okay, he said.
Impulsively, Magnolia reached out and grabbed his hand, feeling the rough calluses of a man who had been a woodworker all his life.
We're online, Timothy reported. The engine is fully operational. Turbofans and thrusters are functioning at 90% power.
The numbers were good. Even better than when they found the ship at Hilltop Bastion. All their work had paid off.
Magnolia relaxed in her leather chair and looked over at Michael. Commander Everhart, she reminded herself. It was up to him now.
Get us off this mud pie, Timothy, he said.
The turbofans kicked on, and the ship creaked and hummed in response as it climbed into the sky.
Goodbye, Timothy said.
He bowed his head slightly and then looked back at the wall-mounted screen as a view of the ground came online. The small graveyard that served as the resting place for the real Timothy Pepper's family emerged on screen. Magnolia thought about saying something, but decided to pay her respects in silence. All sense of motion vanished for a moment as if they were hovering in darkness. Everything seemed peaceful, but Magnolia knew what was coming. Clanking echoed from under the floor as the landing gear retracted into the belly of the airship. When it finally stopped, Michael tapped on his monitor, directing power to the turbofans. Then they were rising toward the heavens, the massive airship groaning and creaking like a prehistoric beast waking after a long hibernation. Recessed lights flickered along the ceiling, and the main screen at the helm changed from a view of the island they were leaving to the storm ahead.
There she is, Layla said.
The massive storm glowed an eerie yellow with a faint hint of orange, as if the clouds were on fire. Patterns of swirling blue marked the center.
The mother of all storms, Roger said, fidgeting nervously with his taped glasses.
He put them back on, and Magnolia reached over and squeezed his hand.
Don't forget what you said earlier, she said.
I won't forget. We're going to find X, and we're going to get back to the Hive, and I'm going to see my parents again.
Roger seemed to be talking to himself as much as to Magnolia, and she didn't reply. She knew how much his family meant to him. This mission was also for X's family in a way. Michael, Layla, and herself. She missed X more than she had ever admitted. Since she was a child, Magnolia had lost everyone she ever cared about, every man she admired, looked up to, and loved. The thought that she might get to see X again was almost too much to deal with, so she went back to studying her monitor and the wall-mounted screen. Deliverance was already at 500 feet. Far below, the cameras showed spurs of land and sporadic islands dotting the endless swamp.
Bringing the thrusters online, Timothy announced.
Magnolia finished the scan of her screen and looked over at Michael and Layla. This was the first time in as long as she could remember that she felt close to anyone. Team Raptor was like a family, and that scared the hell out of her. She gripped Roger's hand harder, and he grinned at her.
Hey, Max, he said.
She smiled back.
Hey.
Thrusters are all online, sir, Timothy announced.
Michael said, take us in. Deliverance lurched, and the harness pushed against Magnolia. She let go of Roger's hand and held on to the straps across her armor. The other divers did the same thing while staring ahead at the monitor. Thunder rattled the hull. The vibration reminded her of the battle drum they used to mark the beginning of a boxing match in the lower decks of the Hive. What she wouldn't give for a glass of shine right about now.
Keep us as low as possible and as fast as possible, Michael ordered.
Timothy's hologram vanished, but his voice boomed over the PA system.
Roger that, sir.
A fort of storm clouds in the distance flashed with pulsing blue light like a beating heart. The orange tint in the middle brightened as they flew toward the monstrosity. Was that the sun bleeding through the ceiling? Timothy reemerged in front of the divers. He put two fingers on his chin, watching the video screen as if in deep thought. The fiery center of the storm looked like a portal that was about to suck them into another dimension. Lightning blazed across the sky, and the thunder that followed boomed like a shotgun.
"Don't you kill us, Timothy Pepper!" Roger shouted.
Magnolia shook her head wearily. What the hell was she going to do with him? He'd probably have a few ideas, but Magnolia still wasn't sure what she wanted. Right now, she just wanted to get through the damn storm in one piece. Deliverance dipped slightly, but the thrusters pushed them to 20 and then 25 miles per hour. 30 seconds later, they were nearing 40.
The airship was designed for a maximum speed of 60, and Magnolia had a feeling they would be pushing that soon. At that speed, it would take them only 20 minutes to reach Miami, but in this storm, 20 minutes was an eternity. Lightning raked across the screen, so bright that the blue flash dazzled Magnolia's eyes. When her vision cleared, they were completely surrounded by the massive, brooding storm. Clouds swirled and bulged in all directions. The ship lowered again, the bow dropping to 200 feet. A view of the swamps came back on screen. A large stretch of land turned and twisted through the water below like a massive snake. Some sort of bridge? The area looked nothing like any of the old world maps in Deliverance's databases.
"Full power to thrusters," Michael said.
Deliverance heaved, and Magnolia jerked forward hard enough that the harness dug into her neck. She grabbed the armrests on her seat, eyes flitting from her monitor to the front screen.
"Entering the central mass of the storm in T-minus 1 minute," Timothy said.
The clouds overhead seemed to part like the gaping mouth of some monstrous sea creature. Magnolia thought of the documentary she had watched as a child of a whale swallowing smaller fish whole. "We're the little fish today," she thought. A barrage of blue bolts speared downward like rain. Turbulence rocked the airship, the bulkheads creaking and cracking.
"I don't know if she can take this for 20 minutes, Roger said.
"She can take it," Michael said. They were moving at 50 miles an hour now, an amazing speed for a ship this size. Magnolia tried to relax in the comfortable leather seat. She closed her eyes, trying to zone out. But a moment later, her eyelids sprang open with the first strike to the ship. The blast licked the starboard hull with a raucous crack. A warning sensor chirped, and the female operator's voice came over the speakers. "Threat level critical," said the maddeningly blasé voice. "Please get to your designated shelters."
"Can't you shut her up?" Michael asked.
"With pleasure, sir," Timothy replied.
The woman's voice cut off in mid-sentence, and Timothy continued.
"Entering the center of the storm in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Magnolia reached for Roger's hand again.
"Hold me, sweet thing," he said.
She looked over to see him grinning. This time she did laugh, but her nervous chuckle was short-lived.
1, Timothy said as another blast of lightning hit the port side of the ship. A monitor behind them exploded, sparks flying over the bridge.
"Oh, my God,"
Roger stuttered. The grin was gone, and his eyes were squeezed shut. He wasn't the only one feeling sick. Magnolia had to will her food to stay down, even though she had eaten very little.
"Take us lower,"
Michael said, his tone still measured and calm.
"I am unable to descend beyond the minimum safe distance," Timothy replied.
Magnolia watched the spurs of land on the screen. Hills and ruined buildings reached up dangerously close to Deliverance's belly. A recessed red light switched on, and the klaxon wailed its high-pitched, alternating tones. Movement danced around the room in the swirling red light, the divers casting shadows that looked like sirens. 2 bolts of lightning struck the bow, and an explosion followed somewhere deeper in the ship. Timothy's hologram reappeared on the bridge.
"Fire detected in compartment 14, he reported.
"Seal it off,"
Michael yelled, his measured tone forgotten. 10 minutes into the journey and the ship was already on fire. Another monitor fell off the bulkhead, shattering on the floor.
"Lower, Timothy," Michael ordered.
"Sir, I would highly recommend..."
"Just do it!"
Magnolia looked at her monitor. They were just 50 feet above the water now, and fast approaching a land mass.
"Contact at 1 o'clock, she shouted.
"Readjusting course," Timothy replied.
The ship veered left, the fins cutting through the air. Lightning illuminated an island about a mile away, silhouetting the shells of old buildings. For the next few minutes they flew under the storm without suffering a single strike, but the turbofans were skirting dangerously close to the jutting towers below.
"The fire in compartment 14 has been isolated," Timothy said. "We are 3 minutes from target."
Another bolt of lightning slammed the starboard hull, and Magnolia gritted her teeth as the ship jolted violently. The klaxon screeched on and on, filling the bridge. On screen, the entire sky seemed to light up at once. Magnolia squinted against the brightness. Nearly blinded, ears ringing, She looked down at the monitor, where dozens of contacts blinked on the radar.
Shit,
she yelled, unsure whether anyone could hear her over the alarms.
We've got multiple objects ahead.
By the time she looked back at the main screen, the obstacles were already looming into view. The buildings lined the horizon like teeth on a siren's jaw.
Are those scrapers? Roger asked.
More of them than I've ever seen, Layla replied.
That's our target, Timothy replied. We are 2 miles out from Miami. Everyone hold on.
Magnolia watched the screen, flinching when a flash of electricity hit the stern. She saw the strike with perfect clarity as it lanced like a bullet into the ship. The screen of her station exploded, sending glass, circuitry, and pieces of metal flying into the air. Shrapnel sliced her cheek, burning as it cut through her flesh. Roger reached out for her.
Mags!
Flames danced from the destroyed console as if reaching out for her body. Michael unbuckled his harness and grabbed an extinguisher. She tried to get out of her harness, but the clasp wouldn't release. The heat from the flames singed her hair, and she pulled back, screaming.
Mags!
Roger cried again as he shucked off his own harness. He reached through the flames, his arm catching fire as he unfastened her belt and dragged her away. White mist suddenly coated the station, suffocating the fire in a single blast. The spray turned on Roger and Magnolia next.
1 minute to target, Timothy said over the comms as if nothing were happening on the bridge.
Smoke from at least 3 fires on the bridge choked the air. A voice was calling out to her over the klaxon's blare.
Magnolia, are you okay? Please, Mags.
She turned toward the sound and found Roger's pleading eyes. Managing a nod, she blinked away the sting of smoke and focused on the main view screen. The skeins of lightning died away. Below, she saw what was once a great metropolis, and beyond the shells of towers was something she had longed to see again. The ocean. The ship jolted again, and Roger helped Magnolia strap into another seat.
There are fires in compartments 4 and 5, Timothy said. Sealing them off now.
Deliverance rocked so violently that the front monitor cracked. Magnolia could still see the ocean, though. And something else. A red light flashing from the top of a tower. Was that a real light or a product of shock?
Taking us down, Timothy said.
The monitor fell to the floor, shattering before she could get a good look at the source of the red light. She reached up and put a hand to her face, gently probing the wound. Her fingers came away bloody. Then they were descending again, slowly like an elevator. Michael finished blasting the fires with the extinguisher, and Vents sucked the smoke out of the room.
Prepare for landing, Timothy said.
1 year and 9 months earlier. X woke up shivering. He forced a heavy eyelid open to a blurred version of the world. He couldn't see much besides rusted brown metal. His face was pressed against a cold metal surface. Groaning, he tried to move onto his side, but his body wouldn't respond. He could move only his eyelids, and even those felt heavy like metal hatches. Was this some sort of a dream? He drew in several long breaths and then pushed at the ground. His arms wobbled, and he fell back to the cold metal. A fence of bars obstructed his view, but through the gaps he could make out a candle burning on a bulkhead, spreading a glow over a pitted surface streaked with brown. He was in a cage inside a larger room. But how had he gotten here? And where was Miles? Fear gripped him when he realized he wasn't just alone, but also shirtless. The resulting surge of adrenaline enabled him to push himself up, stretching clenched muscle fibers. At the sound of voices, his eyes flitted across the room to a metal hatch with a spin wheel.
No, it can't be. You're dreaming.
More of the voices echoed, faint and muddled. It took several moments of listening for X to realize that he couldn't make them out, because he didn't know the language. A vague memory raced through his mind. In it, he was back at the ITC facility, where he heard the same language being spoken. That was basically the last thing he could recall. He wrapped his arms across his chest, shivering in the cold, and trying to think harder. In his mind's eye, he pictured the flashlights inside the stairwell, and then the men in bulky armor with long cords hooked to oxygen tanks.
They were dragging nets full of sirens out of the facility. That was the last thing he remembered before blacking out. Wait. No. There was one other memory. The image of a man with oblong eye coverings on his helmet. He had fired some sort of electrical weapon. The blue jolt was the last thing X remembered. At least Miles was still safe in their hideout. X had to get back to him, but he had no idea where he was or who these people were. One thing he was certain of, they weren't from the sky, at least not from the ship of his memories. And since they had captured him and thrown him in this cell, they weren't good people either.
I fucking hate humans, X said quietly.
Even the croaking whisper sparked the raw pain in his throat, and he remembered why he was ever in the ITC facility to begin with.
Shit. The cancer meds.
The reminder gave him a spark of energy, and he managed to crawl over to the bars. He still wore the bottom half of his suit, but the upper half had been stripped, along with his armor. X crawled along the edge of the cage to look for his gear. He finally spotted it on a pile across the room. Using what little energy he had, he moved over to the edge of the bars and reached between them. His filthy fingernails just narrowly missed the bag containing the cancer meds. He tried again. Letting out a breath, he took a moment to rest, trying to ignore the pain in his throat.
Stay focused. Stay alive. Breathe, Xavier. Just breathe.
He searched his pockets for anything useful. His captors had patted him down pretty well, removing everything from his cargo pockets. Or maybe not everything. He pulled out the small syringe from the bottom of a cargo pocket. Holding it up to the glow of the candle, he saw it was an adrenaline shot, with some liquid still left in it. Footfalls echoed from outside the hatch across the room, and X wasted no time jamming the shot into his leg. He kept the syringe in his hand, holding it flat against his forearm, while his eyes rolled up into his head. His veins constricted, and red flashed across his vision. He gritted his teeth again, and this time, one of them cracked from the pressure. When his vision finally cleared, the wheel on the hatch was spinning. It creaked open and slammed into the bulkhead, disgorging a burly figure that bent down to clear the overhead. X blinked and tried to focus on the huge man wearing one of the bulky armored suits. He carried his helmet under his arm. The glow of the candle spread over his caramel skin and shaved head. A helmeted figure, cradling a rifle, followed him into the room. He stopped next to the open hatch and turned his oval eye slots on X. The man with the shaved head lumbered over to the bars, boots clanking on the deck. He crouched beside the cage, and X shifted his gaze from the siren skull crests on his shoulder pads to his face in the flickering light. The man licked his thick brown lips, dark eyes narrowing beneath a circular scar on his forehead and above a nose whose missing tip provided a window into his nostrils. Hot breath that smelled of barbecued meat hit X in the face. The man grinned, opening his mouth to expose a row of sharpened teeth. Then he spoke approvingly in a deep voice.
Sabrás rico a la parrilla.
X shook his head.
I don't understand.
No español?
English,
X replied, realizing that español was the language he had been hearing. He didn't remember it from school as a kid, but then he didn't remember much else these days either. The man just stared at X for a moment, then pointed to the center of his muscle-shaped chest armor where an octopus had been engraved in the metal.
El Pulpo, King of the Cazadores.
X raised a shaky finger to his chest and said,
Xavier.
He had 100 questions in his jangled brain, but he settled on the first one that came to mind.
What do you want with me? The Cazadores need more.
X tried to make sense of it. How did the Hive not know of their existence? Unless these people had absolutely no radio contact, which was possible now that he thought about it.
Where is your home?
X asked. His captor ignored the question and posed one of his own.
How many of you?
X thought of Miles again. The dog was out there waiting, probably frantic, and judging by this guy's teeth, he would likely eat a dog.
Just me,
X said,
El Pulpo reared his head back and laughed. The man at the bulkhead chuckled, his voice raspy through the breathing apparatus.
"You lie," El Pulpo said, turning his back to X with a stone-cold face.
X shook his head.
"I'm the last man. Or I was until I met you. You lie."
Hot breath hit X in the face. El Pulpo snorted out his third nostril and then calmly said,
"Tell me where the others are."
X blinked and hesitated, then raised a finger to the ceiling.
"In the sky," he said.
El Pulpo narrowed his dark eyes again.
"No more lies. Time to feast."
He pulled a machete from a leather sheath on his belt. Then he retrieved a key from a pocket and unlocked the gate into the large cell. X scrambled backward, the adrenaline shot still rushing through his veins. The man at the bulkhead said something in Spanish and pointed at X.
"No, jefe, está enfermo. Mátelo, nada más, y se lo dejamos a los tiburones."
El Pulpo hesitated, towering over him with the blade drawn. X tried to glean something from their conversation, but he couldn't understand a damn word. The man at the hatch kept repeating,
"No lo comemos, no sasquera."
Clicking his tongue, El Pulpo silenced the other man.
"He says you're sick. No good to eat," El Pulpo said, turning back to X.
Now he knew why the man's breath smelled like barbecue. These barbarians wouldn't stop with eating miles. X was also on the menu. The cazadores were cannibals. El Pulpo grabbed X under the arm and yanked him to his feet.
"No!"
X shouted, squirming in the powerful man's grip. The cold, dull machete blade touched his bare cheek, and rancid breath almost made him gag. X tried to fight, but the man was much stronger and had X in an iron grip.
"I guess we just kill you and feed you to the demonios," El Pulpo said.
It didn't take long for X to realize who the demons were. He was about to become Siren Chow.
"Lo siento," El Pulpo said with raised brow.
As he began to trace the blade across X's throat, X stomped on his foot and pulled free of his grip. Blood trickled down his cold chest. El Pulpo let out a roar. X pulled out his syringe and jammed the needle into the man's right eye. The machete clanked to the floor, and X snatched it up. The man with the rifle was already moving toward the open gate to the cell. X shoved El Pulpo forward and then bounded around his side. The barrel of the rifle hit X in the chest as he raised the blade. Click. The helmeted man looked down at the gun. Heart pounding, X didn't waste his lucky break. He swung the machete into the side of the rifleman's helmet and left it embedded in his skull. Then he grabbed up the rifle and smashed El Pulpo in the round scar on his forehead, which wasn't a scar at all, but a tattoo of the same octopus logo on his chest armor. The massive man collapsed in a heap of armored limbs. X pulled the trigger again, but the gun wouldn't fire. A bad round, perhaps, but he had no time to clear it. And it didn't matter anyway. El Pulpo was out cold. After locking him in the cage, X moved over to grab his gear. An animalistic grunt came from behind, and he glanced over his shoulder at the rifleman with the machete sticking out of his helmet. His legs were squirming, and he was making odd noises. The sight gave him an idea. X didn't know how many cazadores were in this building, but he would need a disguise to escape. X walked over and yanked the machete free. Blood gushed from the man's head, and X removed the helmet to find another face with an octopus tattoo on the forehead. X continued to strip the dead man. Once he had put on new clothes and the armor, he grabbed his pack containing the cancer medicine. There was only one thing left to do before he escaped this wretched place. Find a map or any information he could get about where these barbarians lived. 21. Present day. This was it. The moment Michael had been anxiously awaiting. In a few minutes, Team Raptor would leave the ship and begin the trek through Miami to find X. Breathing in filtered air, he used his headlamp to navigate from the bridge to the cargo hold. Timothy had silenced the alarms, but it didn't matter.
Every creature in Mayamai would have seen them coming in hot over the swamps. Weapons ready and suits functioning at 100%, the four divers stepped into the cargo hold ready for whatever awaited them outside. The door creaked open at Michael's command, and Timothy's hologram emerged by the exit.
"Good luck," he said politely. "I hope you find what you are looking for, Commander."
"Don't move from this location," Michael ordered. He set off down the metal walkway with his AK-47 out and up. To the divers, he said, "NVG's on." He chinned on his optics and moved out into the field that Timothy had chosen as their LZ. A circular structure taller than the ship surrounded them on all sides. Thousands of seats, blasted and melted almost beyond recognition, lined the sloping walls, all facing the field. Michael had no idea what the space had been used for in the old days, and he really didn't care. The ramp to the cargo bay retracted as they cleared the area for contacts. Fingers of smoke rose from the airship's battered hull, still sizzling from a dozen lightning strikes. At least he didn't have to worry about Timothy abandoning them out here. Deliverance wasn't going anywhere until it got some major repairs. From the looks of it, they were lucky to have made it here at all. Magnolia shook her head and muttered, "Hope you have a plan to get us out of here, Commander."
"I think I know what this place was," Roger said. "They used to play games here."
Lightning flayed the ground in the distance. The boom silenced Roger. Michael gestured for the divers to fan out and find the closest exit. He hurried to take the lead, knowing that whatever happened, he could count on his friends. Layla, Roger, and Magnolia were prepared for what came next, and he trusted them to have his back. The plan was simple. Navigate through five city blocks and find the source of X's last transmission. His message had mentioned two locations, one to avoid and one where he had been holed up 2 years ago. It felt almost as if X was still watching out for him. He knew that the odds of finding X alive and mentally stable weren't great, but he had to know, had to give it this one last shot. Thunder boomed overhead. Michael strained to hear the wails of sirens or other beasts over the noise. Neon patches of weeds shifted in the dirt ahead, their pulpy limbs flashing as the divers approached. Michael moved around the clusters, careful not to get close to the suction cups on the longer tendrils. He made for the first row of melted seats and climbed over a wall covered in orange moss. Then he reached back and helped Layla. "You good?" he asked.
"My ankle's much better. You okay?"
A nod. Michael reached out to help Magnolia next. A bandage covered half her face. The shrapnel had slashed deep. Her cheek really needed stitches, but there was no time for that. She hopped over the ledge without his help. Roger followed an instant later, and they moved up the concrete steps toward the first concourse. Inside were little booths that reminded him of the market on the Hive, each marked with faded letters announcing what they had once sold. Popcorn, beer, pizza.
"Pizza," Roger said. "What do you suppose that is?"
The rest of the team, ignoring the old world signs, made their way to a balcony where they could look out at the city. The metal scrapers rose in a jagged line across the sky. Gutted, stripped of paint, and full of black gaps like the mouth of a lower decker. Flashes of lightning backlit the structures as well as the red vines cascading out the windows. Weeds grew along the sidewalks and in open spaces that had once been parks. There was even a cluster of dark gray mushrooms, each the size of a man, growing out of the broken concrete in the lot below. The entire city was infested with mutant foliage, and what wasn't covered in vines was submerged under brown, swampy water. Why the hell had X picked this place? Michael held up his wrist monitor and did a double take when he saw the rads. "The radiation is off the charts," he said. "Timothy, are these readings correct?"
Static crackled, and the AI replied, "Yes, Commander. I also detect a high concentration of toxins in the air."
Michael took a sip of water from the straw in his helmet and used the stolen moment to think. If any of the divers got even a small tear in their suit, they would be compromised and would likely suffer an awful, painful death.
"Don't worry, sir. We're with you,"
Roger said, showing an unexpected flash of awareness.
Hearing the vote of confidence, especially from such an unlikely source, was helpful. But Michael still feared the journey ahead. They had 2 miles of rough terrain to cover, and who knew what threats to face.
"Damn, X sure picked a shithole to retire in," Magnolia said.
Roger chuckled, but Michael could see his brown eyes tight with fear. He waved the divers onward toward a metal stairwell. It led them to a concrete open space with dull blue tables. Beyond was a parking lot full of destroyed vehicles, with more of the purple weeds and the huge round mushrooms growing in the spaces between them. Several skeletons, now covered in orange moss, lay on the ground right where they had fallen centuries ago. Michael checked the nav marker on his mini-computer for their target, and then set off across the parking lot. The street beyond had sunk and filled with water. Foam, the color of a flesh wound, lapped against the edges. He zoomed in with his binos on a massive yellow frog perched on a concrete ledge covered in red weeds. A single eyeball glared at the water, and a tongue shot out of its mouth. It pulled a small fish out of the stew and swallowed it. Another flash of motion came from the weeds. A 6-foot-long snake, mostly camouflaged by the foliage, shot forward and swallowed the frog in a single gulp. Michael lowered the binos. Even a glimpse of the food chain here was enough to make him want to turn around and hide aboard the airship. Instead, he pushed back the fear and led the others onward. For the next hour, they moved cautiously through the city. Unlike most of the places where they had scavenged over the years, there was no sign of snow. The temperature was a comfortable 72 degrees, but the radiation remained high. The climate here was different, and the mutant flora and fauna seemed to thrive in the warm, moist environment. They trekked along the sagging network of roads, many of which had been swallowed by the earth and were filled with stagnant water. Glowing weeds writhed as they passed the shattered storefronts. Roger and Magnolia kept their eyes on the higher floors of the buildings, while Michael and Layla kept their rifles trained at ground level.
"We're being watched," Magnolia said.
"I can feel it."
"Me too," said Layla.
Michael looked up at the buildings towering above them, but saw nothing in the green hue of his night vision goggles. So far, the camouflage Roger had designed to reduce the energy output of their suits seemed to be working. They were about halfway between the LZ and their target, when a noise stopped Michael in his tracks. It sounded like many multi-limbed creatures skittering over the concrete. The other divers took cover behind a brick wall covered in red vines.
"Stay away from those plants, and stay put," Michael whispered. "I'll take a look."
Without waiting for a response, he moved around the corner, keeping low. He dashed to a fallen billboard that stuck out of the dirt like an axe stuck in wood. The clanking and scratching grew louder. He peered around the sign at another road slanting into a pool of water. No, not a pool. A lake. 2 scrapers rose out of the water in the distance. He stood cautiously and moved around the corner, looking at the shoreline, which seemed to be moving. His finger went to the trigger guard of his rifle as he watched hundreds of beetles the size of guinea pigs consuming the carcass of a fish on the concrete shore. They reduced it to a skeleton as he watched. A voice behind his shoulder made him flinch.
"That's disgusting," Magnolia said.
Roger and Layla showed up a moment later, weapons lowered as they watched.
"This city, it's alive," Roger said.
Layla nodded.
"There's an entire ecosystem here. It's like nothing I've ever seen."
"And I'm guessing we haven't seen the half of it yet," Michael said.
He scanned the area for higher ground and directed them toward an elevated street that turned into a bridge. The heat-warped hulls of vehicles clogged the road, providing plenty of cover, hiding spots for beasts. Using hand signals, he told the divers to spread out. Roger took point on the right side and Michael took the left. The bridge rose several hundred feet over the water, providing a view of the city. To the east, beyond the fence of scrapers, lay the seemingly infinite stretch of black water. And something else. Something that didn't seem to belong in this wasteland.
"Do you see that flashing red light?" Magnolia asked over the comm channel. She had her binoculars up to her visor.
A brilliant web of electricity flickered overhead, spreading a cold blue light over the wasteland. The thunderclap sounded as Michael squeezed between two vehicles and stood next to Magnolia.
"What is it?" he asked.
She handed him the binos.
"Take a look for yourself."
Michael peered through the glasses at a silo rising out of the beach. Red and white paint swirled up the walls. It reminded him of one of the candy sticks his dad used to buy him from the trading post on the Hive. The lookout at the top was flashing a bright red glow.
"It's a lighthouse," Magnolia said. "Same thing I saw in my dive to the Hilltop Bastion. I thought I recognized it on the way in, but..."
Roger looked through his own binos.
"How the hell is that thing still working? It couldn't have been running all this time, could it?"
Layla shrugged.
"ITC facilities have backup power, so why can't that tower?" "Here's a better question," Magnolia said. "Why is it flashing? Lighthouses used to warn ships away from rocks, right? I remember reading about..."
"I don't know, but we need to keep moving," Michael said. He handed the binos back to Magnolia and set off across the bridge before she could respond. Right now, his priority was finding X, not figuring out the lighthouse. His nav marker put their target just two blocks away, but the bridge took them right into another flooded street. He held up a fist at the edge of the water. Dipping his boot in, he found that it came up only to his ankle. Another quick scan around told him this was their best route.
"Let's try it," he said.
Another hand signal ordered Team Raptor into the muck. They moved through the shallow water until they reached an intersection. To the east, a mountain of debris blocked the street. The west was a delta that fed out into the lake he had seen earlier.
"Great," Michael said, cursing.
"Look at that." Magnolia pointed at a ship wedged between two high-rises to the north.
"Weird."
Michael checked his nav marker again. Thanks to their detour and the blocked street, they were still two blocks from the source of the signal. He looked up at the buildings to the east beyond the wall of debris. One of them was the place where X had transmitted his SOS. Michael resisted the urge to scope the windows, searching for some sign that their journey would be worth it, and instead waved the group toward the wall. As they waited, the red foam floating on the surface clung to his legs. It looked like frothy, blood-flecked spittle.
"Michael,"
Roger said.
Sir.
Michael glanced over his shoulder. The other divers had halted and were looking back the way they had come. Ripples moved across the surface, away from the lake. A fin emerged, cutting through the water like a knife.
"Move,"
Michael rasped. Roger let out a yelp and nearly tripped as he turned away. Layla and Magnolia followed him, but Michael held his ground, watching in horror as six more scaly dorsal fins broke through the murky water. He considered firing on them before they breached the surface, but didn't want to risk drawing more unwanted attention. Forcing himself to look away, he moved after the rest of the team. The closer they got to the wall, the deeper the water became. Soon it reached his knees, then his thighs. By the time he was halfway to the sloping barricade of brick and concrete, he was nearly waist deep. Michael stopped and raised his rifle. They weren't going to make it, and he couldn't risk an attack from the fish or snakes or whatever the hell was swimming under the dark surface. Memories of the ordeal in the swamps haunted him. He refused to go through anything like that again. He brought his rifle up, but hesitated when he saw a smooth head and a dorsal fin break the surface. This wasn't a snake, it was a fish. Moving his finger toward the trigger, he prepared to spray the water with bullets. A shadow suddenly swooped around the building to his right, and he pulled the scope away from his visor to see frayed wings beating the air. An electronic wail followed, and a siren scooped a fish the size of a small child out of the water. It flapped away, holding the squirming creature in its talons. If Michael had learned anything from his time on the surface, it was that sirens hunted in packs. He shouldered his rifle and fired over Roger's head, sending a three-round burst into another beast, which had swooped around a building with its eyeless face centered on Layla. The creature spiraled out of control and smashed into a two-story building.
"Come on!"
Michael yelled, thrashing through the water as fast as he could move. Magnolia and Roger continued wading toward the wall, The fish darted off in all directions, dorsal fins retreating under the surface as the apex predators flew overhead. The sky had come alive with the bat-like shrieking monsters. Michael fired on full auto, raking the weapon in an arc to keep the sirens back. The magazine went dry in a few seconds. He ejected it and slammed a fresh one in as he moved.
"Covering fire!"
he yelled. The crack of a rifle came over his shoulder. Roger and Magnolia had made it to the wall, and one of them was firing. It wouldn't be long before the noise attracted every beast in the city. They had to get to cover. He turned and helped Layla through the water as she stumbled on her weak ankle, eyes flitting from the water to the sky. Roger and Magnolia were both firing from the wall of debris now, the crack of their weapons punching through the screech of the sirens. Lightning blossomed behind the wall, illuminating their armored silhouettes. Booming thunder, screaming monsters, and the crack of gunfire raised an ear-splitting din. Layla reached the wall and pulled herself up onto the slope. Michael stopped to fire on the creatures trying to flank them. There were a dozen, maybe more, most of them swooping down on the water to pluck out fish. But a few sirens were focused on bigger prey. A pair of the larger monsters made a run for the divers, but the covering fire was working. They wheeled away, blood dripping from multiple wounds.
"Take my hand, Tin," Layla shouted.
He waded toward the 50-foot-high pile of debris. She was crouched on the slope, balanced on a slab of concrete. His fingers had just met hers when something sliced into his leg. Michael let out a cry of pain as teeth ripped through the gap in his armor between knee and thigh. He let his rifle sag over his chest, pulled out his knife, and brought the blade down on the fish that had clamped onto his leg. The tip cracked through bony plates and plunged into flesh, freeing him from the beast. He stowed the knife, grabbed Layla's hand, and climbed up onto the wall.
"Hurry!"
Roger yelled. He was frantically loading new bullets into the cylinder of his pistol, losing several in the process, while Magnolia kept firing her rifle. Empty shell casings rained down onto the concrete. Michael tried not to look at his leg, but he couldn't help himself. Blood sluiced down his knee and armored calf guard. His suit had been compromised. He was as good as dead. Layla saw it too.
"We have to patch it," she yelled.
He shook his head.
"Not now. Move!"
They scrambled up to the top of the mound. There he leaned on Layla before following Roger and Magnolia down the other side. A narrow street lined by four-story buildings was relatively clear for the next block, but a dome-shaped steel cage as wide as the road blocked their escape at the bottom of the slope.
"We're trapped!" Magnolia shouted.
The sirens were banking in formation over the water, ignoring the fish and turning their eyeless faces toward the divers.
"Fire!" Michael shouted. "Hold them off!"
The divers raised their weapons. The beasts came in all at once, a flying wedge of cadaverous flesh and sinewy muscle. He counted at least a dozen of the beasts, but they moved so fast it was hard to tell for sure. Otherworldly wails sounded from the west as more sirens joined the hunt. Michael emptied his magazine and turned to see another cluster flapping around the tower where X had sent the SOS. He changed his magazine and turned back to the nearest group. One of them penetrated the wall of fire and swooped toward Layla. She ducked and brought her rifle up to fire three rounds into the monster's spine. A cracking noise came from behind, but it wasn't a rifle. By the time Michael realized what was happening, it was too late. The scree had shifted under the weight of the four divers, sending bricks and concrete tumbling toward the street below. Roger and Magnolia were already caught in the landslide, Magnolia shouting curses as she fell toward the cage. Michael and Layla went next, sliding on their backs. The entire fall took less than 5 seconds, but the momentum resulted in a hard landing inside the open door of the cage. His helmet smacked onto the street. Red lights broke across his vision. His leg burned like nothing he had ever experienced in his life, as if someone were jabbing a hot needle into his flesh. He blinked through the pain and pushed himself up. Motion flashed from all directions, disorienting him, but he managed to focus on Magnolia. She stood at the other side of the cage, shaking the bars. Layla was firing at the sirens on top of the pile they had just slid down, raking the mound with bullets. Once they were down, she scrambled over to Michael and reached for her medical kit.
"We have to get you patched up," she said, handing him her rifle. "You hold them off."
Four sirens clambered to the top of the hill. The only escape was up the slope and past the beasts.
but Michael could see that it wasn't going to be easy. The monsters squawked and screeched at the captive divers.
"Shoot them!"
Michael yelled. He fired a controlled burst at a beast perched on the mound. It darted away,